Hey everybody, how are you guys doing? I'm Colleen Fabry and this is Venture Europe. Venture Europe is a series of conversations with successful entrepreneurs, investors and ecosystem contributors where we discuss about the strategies, tactics, frameworks and failings that they have used and experienced during their journey. It is my personal vendetta to contribute in making Europe one of the most attractive entrepreneurial ecosystems in the world. Big words, hard work, so let's get started. This episode is brought to you by Vauban, the easiest way to launch and run your venture investing. An all-in-one integrated solution to form syndicates, VC funds, and co-investment SPV programs that are built for the next generation of global ventures. From fundraising to exits, Vauban provides an automated back office that handles the legals, banking, investor onboarding, and administration, which allows their clients to focus on what matters: finding the next unicorn and building investor relationships. Vauban has facilitated over $1 billion of capital invested in companies such as Revolut, Bolt, and Airbnb, among others. Find out why funds like Antimus, Octopus Ventures, and Back VC, just to name a few, are using Vauban by heading to vauban.io. And now, back to our guest. My guests today are Daniel Back and Doreen Tarau, the founders of Fulvio. Fulvio is a customer support suite that lets you instantly monitor, control, and analyze user sessions for faster real-time customer support. The guys founded Fulvio in 2021, and in record time, they've raised 10 million euros in just 10 months from top investors like Cherry, Seedcamp, and later on from Lightspeed. During this episode, we discuss about how to build momentum and create urgency when fundraising, how to hire player coaches, and how Anushka from Lightspeed convinced the team to choose Lightspeed instead of another VC on a higher valuation. Without further ado, please enjoy this excellent conversation with Daniel Back and Doreen Tarau, founders of Fulvio. Let's start with the story of our burger in Copenhagen. It was September last year and you were closing your pre-seed round. You told me some crazy stories about what VCs would do to try to get in the round. Do you remember some of the calls, some of the stories, some of the situations?
Yeah, it was a pretty funny story. We were in the fortunate position of having a relatively competitive funding round. And then, you know, especially back then, Q4 last year in 2021, the market was just absolutely crazy. So I think some VCs were just, you know, head over heels trying to figure out how, like what to do. And we were lucky that we had plenty of options and they knew that. So there were some weird stories where like one London-based VC, not going to name any names here, but we had a meeting with him when he was like, guys, let's, you know, we can do this at 10, 15, $20 million valuation. Doesn't matter. Let's just do this. Come on, let's partner up. And then just like really almost as if you were buying a used Toyota, you know, like a used car lot. And I was like, whoa, okay, chill. Like, let me think about this. Let's have a discussion. Let's like, you know, get to know each other first and then decide whether we're going to, you know, enter into a long-term partnership or what's going to happen. A lot of crazy stories like that last year, especially.
Yeah, and also like you mentioned that it was a very competitive round. And I remember you didn't really have a website yet. So I was wondering, like, what do you think you guys did very well to create all this momentum and make it so competitive?
Yeah, I think we were good at trying to essentially create like a marketplace for our fundraise, trying to cram as much into as short of a time period as possible. I think a lot of founders, they think that fundraising is something where you need to, you know, take a lot of casual coffee meetings beforehand or, you know, 6-12 months leading up to your fundraise. You need to do the exact opposite of that in most cases, especially in the pre-seed and seed stage. Later stage fundraising perhaps is a different game. But especially in the early stages, it's better just, you know, focus on building something, focus on your narrative and your story and your initial user validation. And then once you decide to fundraise, then go all in and really fundraise. And then, you know, cram as much as you can into, for example, a 2-week period. So that's what we did. We said, okay, from this week to this week, we're going to be fundraising and we're not going to meet anyone outside of that period. So if you want to meet with us and be part of the discussion, you need to meet with us in this time frame. And then we had literally back-to-back meetings every single day, almost basically, yeah, literally like a, you know, more than a full-time job. That's kind of how we were able to get it done so fast and also optimize, you know, the outcome for us.
Yeah. And if I could add a bit on top of that, like, I think also the product that we're building, it talks directly to a pain that is well known already in the market. Like before actually going out to fundraise, both Daniel and myself, we started talking with a lot of customer support leaders, and it's kind of like everyone said, when can we start using such a solution, which showed a real validation that, oh yeah, the problem is there, it's burning, and everyone understands it. So I'm pretty sure that it was the same with our investors. We didn't have to explain whether or not this is like we're offering like a solution that is for an existing problem, or is it something that we're trying to invent?
So you kind of lined up all those meetings. I really like the term just creating a marketplace for your shares and make sure that there are enough kind of competitors or enough people actually to try to get those shares. So in this period of 2 weeks, you met different type of investors, like the crazy type of investors that maybe came a little bit later on that really wanted to get in, but also some good investors. You are also very, very early. I remember you actually telling me about this VC that asked you for financial projections. So I was wondering, like, what questions did you get that were good questions and are like, okay, they get it, they asked the right questions? And which questions did you get from some VCs that you were like, okay, I don't think we should take the second meeting?
Yeah, good question. It's a very clear distinction between the ones who really know what they're talking about and everyone else. When, for example, someone asks about a financial projection, that happened to us. You know, it only happened once, actually. But still, it was very strange to ask. You know, at that part, we were a pre-seed company and we didn't have a website. We didn't have a product built out. We just had, you know, some like a nice, you know, me and Doran and a nice couple of developers with us. But we didn't have a real business at all, right? So a financial projection is kind of a joke at that point. We also told them that, like, hey, guys, look, this is what do you want me to do? I can, you know, pull up a spreadsheet and I can put a bunch of BS storytelling together for you if that's what you really want me to do. But it's not going to get us anywhere. Let's instead talk about the roadmap. Let's talk about what we're actually building. Let's talk about the long-term vision, the team, people we want to hire with these funds, et cetera, instead of some kind of, you know, it feels like kind of a box that people just want to check. Maybe it's part of the LP agreement or something like that, that they have to ask for it. I don't know. But it just seems a little bit ridiculous at that point. And then in contrast to like the really, you know, more tier one investors, and I would definitely put, you know, Lightspeed into that category as well. It's just a striking difference when you talk to people like that. Once you go into the meeting, they're already prepared. They already know everything. They already know what you do. They already looked into your space. They know all your competitors. They know exactly the problem you're trying to solve. And the conversation from the get-go is just so different. It's from the get-go more about long-term vision. And how big could this thing really be? And where do you guys want to take it? Are you guys the real team, the right team to do this? And so forth, instead of all the fluffy stuff.
So what are the good questions that you got from the investors that you chose at pre-seed? Because you're just so early on. How do they try to validate if this is an interesting investment opportunity?
Yeah, Doran, maybe you want to shed some light on that?
I don't know exactly if I could point out some specific good questions, but I would definitely say that the people that wanted to talk, as Daniel mentioned, about like, what is the big vision that you have here? People trying to understand how big is this problem? How big is the market for what you're trying to solve? I think those were the big questions, because as Daniel mentioned, at such an early stage as we were at pre-seed, like as a VC, you bet on the team, on the founding team. There is no traction, there is no numbers to be shown. So you bet on the team. And a lot of the good questions were like picking up our brains, and some even opened maybe even more our eyes to like ways to further expand further down the line, for example.
Mm-hmm. I would also add to that that I think that a lot of people, they think about market sizing, which that's fair enough. But I think what you really need to think about is the market dynamics. And that's a very clear kind of distinction between people who really, you know, understand the market versus people who, you know, to be fair, of course, you can't be an expert in everything. But some people, you're coming into a conversation with a new startup to potentially invest in, not knowing anything at all about the market, not having done any prior research, which I think at least that should be table stakes to do some prior research. But then, yeah, people who are more into it already from the get-go, they'll talk more about the dynamics of the market and also like what are the workflows of your customers' existing workflows, how does your proposed solution and product fit into those existing workflows versus trying to, for example, create new workflows for your users and just going into more granularly things like that.
Yeah, actually, I can chip in with a good question that you guys got, because I'm a VC, so I always want to learn how to do better. And I remember specifically that I asked you guys, like, what type of questions did the investors that you choose ask? And I remember clearly you guys saying that they asked, what type of customer discovery did you do? And how did you go and talk with the support leaders? And I'm like, okay, that's 100 times much more important than actually financial projections.
I totally agree with you. Like, how did you get in touch with your initial customers or design partners or users or whatever you want to call them? And also, you know, what, let's go into the feedback that they told you about. I think that's at the end of the day, you're building a new solution. Most startups are building something new in the world, right? Or at least a new take on something that already exists. So let's kind of dig into how the actual users of this, they would actually interact with it and the value they create.
And for your pre-seed, you choose to go with two funds, with Seedcam and Cherry, instead of kind of going with another only one big fund. Like, why did you choose two funds and not one big fund?
It was a little bit of a hack in some way from our side that, like, of course, there's some benefit, obvious things like, you know, we wanted to have, you know, the networks of two different funds versus the network of one fund at our disposal. But then it was also like, we kind of knew how the game worked. We knew that, okay, most funds have some kind of ownership targets that they want to reach, whether it's, you know, 10, 15%, whatever it might be. So we decided, hey, if we have two co-leads here, we can actually, you know, find a pretty easy way to get them below their ownership targets, which obviously it's good for us because then at the next round, it'll make it more competitive because they'll both have a very strong incentive to put even more money into the company and up their ownership percentage. So that's, you know, just a little hack that I'm just very openly sharing right now. But I think, you know, why not? Most founders, they need to know that who they're actually doing business with and know, understand the incentives of the investors on the other side of the table. If you can understand their incentives, you can understand, you know, what motivates them and how to actually get the best deal for yourself.
So you've raised around 1.5 million euros in pre-seed, and then 4 to 5 months later, you raised around 7 million euros from Lightspeed. How does one do that?
Dorian, how does one do that? Let us know.
There's a couple of things, but I would say that the most important one is the urgency. And of course, there's many factors, market conditions. They were pretty good when we raised the seed. But I would say that when, like, both Daniel and myself, we fundraised our pre-seed, and then we thought we didn't have to raise again our seeds. We had plenty of runway, but we both thought from the beginning that we, you know, and we still use that thinking now. Now we have even more runway. But we want to get to our goals, and we know that we need to get to our goals in a way as if we have maybe one third of that budget, right? That creates a lot of urgency in the team. We've been creating all kinds of challenges, for example, also for Daniel and myself, while building the product, like, what can we do to further build, like, a good pipeline? We built a pretty strong design partner group, over 100 customer support leaders. And I remember that I was sitting in the office together with Daniel, and then every single week we set one goal. We exceeded the goal, and that was the new goal for the next week and the new goal for the next week. And we applied the same kind of thinking in the product development. So I would say that, in my opinion, the number one reason was the urgency that we created in the team, and we live to that even today.
And do you remember the first meeting with Lightspeed? What was the process like?
I think the first meeting was actually really refreshing because we came into the meeting, met Anushka and Adrian, and it was very clear that they had already done a ton of research into the customer support industry, and specifically also for us. And for example, they knew all about, for example, some of our competitors and some of the legacy players. And for example, also go into more detailed product things, like part of what Fullview does is also troubleshooting and screen control, but a more modern take than, for example, TeamViewer, Splashtop, these types of legacy players. And they had already done a ton of research, and they showed us that research too, detailed reports on these specific domain industry players. And then it was just a very kind of going into someone who was almost like talking to, you know, when you talk to a customer, you know, they're sitting there every single day and they know the problem in and out. It felt almost like that, but except it was not a customer, it was an investor.
Investor. How long did the process take, and how did they convince you that they are the right partner?
Yeah, it's a funny story. It's like, I think they showed a lot of hustle as well that made us want to choose them as partners. Of course, we knew about they have a good brand name, and we knew about them beforehand, but especially Anushka showed so much like hustle. It's a really funny story, actually. So we have an office here in Copenhagen, and then we have an office in Romania where we have our development team, one unified team, but with two different offices. We were working from our Romanian office that week while doing the fundraising. And then Anushka said, hey, you guys, you know, let's meet in person, even though she's based in San Francisco. She said, let's meet in person. And then she literally booked a last minute flight and flew all the way to Romania from San Francisco on like a super short notice and met us in person, took us out for a nice dinner and everything. And I was like, okay, most VCs don't even want to fly from London to Copenhagen. That's like a 1.5 hour flight. And she flew all the way from San Francisco at last minute notice. That also showed us, okay, like, they're not messing around. They're serious about this. showed a lot of hustle.
Yeah, so actually for the people listening, to fly from Copenhagen or Stockholm to Cluj, where your office is based, is not that easy. Actually, when I fly to Cluj, I have to take like maybe two flights. I mean, I can't imagine how it is like to fly from San Francisco.
I still couldn't believe that she's going to show up till the last minute when I actually saw her, because I thought, yeah, it's kind of like a bold move. But what I would like to mention that is that it was also a lesson both for Daniel and myself. And then we applied the same technique when we wanted to make some new hires in the company. Like I remember one of our latest engineers, he joined from like a larger company from the US, but he was there from the beginning as a startup. Then we really wanted him. So what we did on a Friday night, last minute, an email came through. I was at the office with Daniel, and then we offered earlier that day to meet in person, but we didn't expect that the developer will give course to that invitation. So what happened was that at 10 in the evening on a Friday, we got an email saying that, oh yeah, I would really like to meet you. Next week, we were supposed to go to Barcelona for our team offsite. So what we did, we just booked a last minute flight and early next morning flew to London, then from London to Cluj, met with him, and 3 days later he joined us.
Anushka move, right?
Yeah.
It's known as the Anushka move. When you want to close a deal with a customer, employee, or whatever it might be, you show up in person. Doesn't matter how much of a pain in the ass it is to get there. Show up in person. Show your care.
Amazing. Love it. You've been the hype and cool kids on the block in Copenhagen and in Denmark, and now the expectations to execute are kind of high. Probably the next round will be on the grounds of traction. Do you feel the pressure? How do you go about it? What are the next milestones that you want to hit?
Do you feel the pressure, Doran? What do you think? I feel it.
Definitely. Definitely. And as you mentioned, Colleen, so I'm an immigrant in Denmark. I moved here 10 years ago, and I'm quite proud to say that we managed to raise the largest seed round in the history of Denmark. But that obviously comes with a lot of pressure. I know that everyone's watching us. We need to deliver on the promise, and we need to show really good numbers for the next milestone. But I think like there's other maybe more pressing challenges, such as this big mission that we started on. What we're battling is we want to build a solution, not a tool. And I know that there's this conventional wisdom that in the startup world, you need to start narrow. And obviously that comes with a lot of benefits, such as like much faster time to market and lower R&D costs. But if you look at like historically, there has been so many tools out there created for a flow, right? And then in the customer support flow, we've seen that before we started even fundraising. We saw that there is so many smaller tools out there that solve small bits of this customer support journey. But the mission we have is to build an all-in-one tool. I mean, to build an all-in-one solution, not a tool. Because the customer doesn't care that, oh yeah, you can solve, you have these really 3-5 cool features, but how is this going to be integrated into my solution? The challenge that is presented with so many tools out there is that all your data is scattered across all these different places instead of having everything in one place. So yeah, this is like kind of like a bold mission. I'm really inspired by Wiz. If you know the Israeli startup, I saw that they're now the fastest growing startup in the world.
Yeah, fastest to 100 million in ARR. So basically fastest SaaS company ever.
Yeah. Then I was reading about the same mission that they have to build an all-in-one solution for cybersecurity.
How do you go about something that is more complex and at the same time, let's say, showing the traction for the next round?
Obviously, that puts a lot of pressure on everyone, especially on the product team. But I think prioritization is key. Of course, we started like smaller and we found our wedge into the market. And then from there, we started expanding on the left and on the right.
Yeah, exactly. That is a challenge, of course, trying to build what used to be, you know, multiple different products into one product with a very smooth and easy UX, UI that can consolidate, you know, multiple players into one tool. That's definitely a big challenge for a small startup with, you know, still limited resources, limited time to do so. But I think the only way to solve that problem is to execute with intensity and speed so you can get there as fast as possible and iterate along the way.
I remember how Eleonore Crespo, previously Index and now running Pigment, said that at early stage, it's all about people. So what is the strategy? Now you have cash in the bank accounts. Like, what is the strategy to go about hiring senior people, let's say from Series C companies that have been through the growth journey that you are planning to go through?
Yeah, good question. I think, so there's a common trap that we almost fell into as well. And I think a lot of founders, they think that, okay, we should go hire like people with fancy resumes, people from the hottest unicorns out there and so forth. And that's, you know, I totally understand why that's alluring. And we almost did the same thing as well. And I'm very happy that we didn't, because we actually realized, you know what, you know, in the process of interviewing a lot of these people that, you know, despite how intelligent and talented they are, people who work in larger organizations, for example, let's say a head of sales in a larger organization is used to having an existing product, an existing brand, and an army of sales reps, for example, that can kind of execute on their behalf. And they're used to being more of a delegator versus people who work in startups. They're used to limited budgets, you know, buggy products, no existing brands, and just rolling up their sleeves and really like, you know, going, getting dirty with it and getting the job done themselves. We were trying to find like the best balance, because of course, you also, when you're hiring more senior people, you also need people who can have some leadership qualities to them as well. So we hire people that we now call player coaches, basically people who can, you know, if you think of like sports analogy, people who can be both a player on the field and also be a coach or like a quarterback to others. So that's kind of what we try to go after. And then we try to find people who also, for example, have shown a lot of entrepreneurial grit themselves, like had side projects that they've been working on, small hobby projects here and there that they've grown with limited resources in a limited time span as well. And I think Doran also looks at, Doran and I look for that a lot of engineers. Maybe Doran, you want to share more about that?
Yeah, definitely. Talk again about, like, for example, the last hire when we came and we met together with him, and then he started talking about all his side projects that he has at home and like all the cool things that he's doing in the outside working hours. That's how you know that someone is really passionate about his craft, because especially in software engineering, and not only, but I strongly believe this is, it's like a craft. In order to be really good at it, you have to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. And also, for example, when we wanted to hire our head of growth, we looked for people who had, for example, some people who had their own podcast, some people had their own blog that they had grown, so were like super, like, for example, nerdy on SEO and had grown their own blog to, you know, tens of thousands of monthly visitors, you know, just themselves on the weekends. So people with that type of grit, that's what we look for.
Are you guys hiring? I have a podcast as well.
You should, I thought you were a VC, that. Man. You're making the big bucks. Why do you want to work at Fullview?
In closing, let's get personal. I got some feedback from your current investors, and Max from Cherry said that one thing that stands out about you guys is the way that you can create momentum and urgency. I was wondering, how do you do that? How do you plan that? How do you strategize that?
There's a few different angles. Maybe, Doran, you want to talk about how we do it in the product team? I can maybe talk about how we do it on the more go-to-market side.
Everything, again, ties into creating urgency. We all know as a company, like, where do we need to get for the next fundraise? But that can be like quite a big milestone and hard to digest. So we always break things down into smaller milestones. And we tie all the deadlines into external factors, such as we are going to have a meeting with this large customer in about 2 weeks. And there's these two, three features that are going to block that deal. We really need to get these features out, and the deadline is strict. We cannot postpone that. And everyone else in the team knows that we are going to be held accountable in front of this larger customer, because we set the meeting with them. It's put in the calendar, and we don't want to waste our customer's time, right? That creates a huge sense of urgency in the team. It's not like a manufactured one. It actually is tied into external factors.
Yeah, exactly. And Doran, just to add on that as well, I think, exactly, you need to tie things into external factors and tell people, like, you know, give people also skin in the game to actually care about those external factors, right? I think a lot of people, a lot of founders in Europe, actually, they're very good at hiring, but they're not so good at aligning incentives inside of their team, which is super important, especially, you know, you can do that through equity packages that, you know, that's a, you know, topic that people talk about all the time in European tech, because it's hard in many countries to give out equity packages. And there's also not so much of a culture around giving equity to your employees. But I think it's absolutely vital. And there's many ways you can do it with a good lawyer, but I think it's absolutely vital to give generous equity packages to people so they have a long-term incentive with you. So they're not just there to collect a salary. Nothing wrong with that. But I think that you should hire people that care more about equity plus a salary on top of that as well, with the equity being the main piece, right? To actually be owners in the business and have long-term incentives aligned with the founders and the investors. And then be really, really crystal clear on your communication to the mission that you're going after and the goals that you have and the problems you want to solve and why you're doing what you do every day. If you can nail those things, then you can create a really strong sense of urgency, because then suddenly you hit a switch and people actually care about what you're doing. And they have a reason, personal reason, to actually care.
What do you think people from outside get wrong about FullView?
I think we get a lot of people constantly asking us about like fundraising and stuff like that. And that's, you know, we're not here just to fundraise all the time. That's not what we spend every day on, despite, you know, what we're talking about on this podcast right now, or seeing that we raise one of the biggest seed rounds in Scandinavia and all of that, or in Europe, I should say. But I think what we're actually doing is like the whole purpose of fundraising is to build a business at the end of the day. And I'm not, me and Doran, we're not in this to just keep fundraising. We're here to solve important and urgent problems for our customers and to create value in the world and solve problems that we care about ourselves, our employees care about, and most importantly, our customers care about. But fundraising is just a means to an end to do that.
Got it.
So I don't want to just be known as a hype machine that don't exist to keep raising money from investors.
I see the pressure there. Daniel, I can feel it.
Yes, it is. It is pressure, but you know, we exist for our customers.
What was the most challenging period in your careers and how did you guys overcome it?
Yeah, maybe I can put a bit of light on, of course, like when you're fundraising, it's quite challenging, especially because we set everything and we've done it in a relatively short, or if I may say, in a very short time span compared to what we've heard from other founders. So we've done both the pre-seed and the seed in about 2 weeks. That meant that every day from early morning till 12 in the night, because we had meetings with VCs from the US as well, day in and day out, we had meetings. I remember I also had the COVID at that time, didn't even have time to take breaks for having lunch or dinner. It was definitely challenging, but even more so maybe at the beginning of the summer, we launched the second version of the product. Like we launched FullView Replays, which is the kind of like the second product within FullView. And we experienced quite a lot of demands, which created, of course, a lot of stress on the system, but in turn, it created a lot of stress on us as a team. But we overcame that, and now we are ready to onboard much larger customers.
What about you, Daniel?
Yeah, and I would also say a challenge in my career. I think maybe I always knew I wanted to start my own company as long as I can remember. I'm still, you know, very young, but since I was probably in middle school or whatever. And I think maybe I got distracted by, I was lucky to have great job offers and, you know, climbing the ranks and whatever at different companies I worked at. But then it's very easy to get distracted by that and get like comfortable with a steady paycheck and all that. And then I think I just, you know, got a little bit distracted by all of that. Should have probably just started a company with Doran sooner. But I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we're here.
What is the worst advice you guys have received so far?
There's a lot. There's a lot of bad advice out there. There's a lot of bad advice from people who have not operated companies themselves, especially. A lot of investors have very good intentions with wanting to add value to startups. And a lot of them, they do add a lot of value to startups. And I would say we're lucky that our investors, especially, and not just saying this because they might listen to this podcast, but generally behind closed doors, they add a lot of value, especially Lightspeed. I would say they give us, you know, a bird's eye perspective on which benchmarks we should follow and ideas that they see from other portfolio companies, which is an incredibly valuable asset for us. But there's also a lot of other investors we come across in our day that, yeah, just, you know, try to give advice just for the sake of saying something. I think more specifically, an example that was really bad is someone advised us to hire ahead of people at the pre-seed stage, which now in hindsight, that makes no sense to me at all. Like, culture should be one of your number one priorities as a founder, and it should stay with you for as long as you possibly can throughout the life of your company. And you should only hire ahead of people to help you when you want to scale your culture, not when you want to build your culture. It's your job to build the culture, lay the foundations, stick to everything that relates to people management and HR and culture and whatever it might be yourself, and then only hire ahead of people when you're post-product market fit and you're ready to scale.
And what about you, Doran? Worst advice?
Maybe also it ties into the previous question, like sometimes what do people get wrong about FullView? Like the fact that we raised such a massive seed round doesn't mean that we are going to go out there and start hiring people, because I strongly believe that there's David Sachs once said that like the best companies out there have 2x more than what they would need, and the worst companies have 3x. What that tells me is that everyone overhired, right? So we didn't, the fact that we raised such a big sit down, even though we wanted to, or we were tempted to go out and hire a bunch of new colleagues. But as Daniel always says, like we need to hire only when there's a very, very strong burning fire. And yes, every day is a burning fire and you can always use some extra hands. But we were planning to do that once we see that, okay, like we've reached a strong product market fit. Now it's time to put more coal on the fire.
Totally agree with that, Doran. Keep your headcount as lean as you possibly can. Keep your burn rate low, especially when you're pre-product market fit.
Exactly.
What do you guys think makes a good entrepreneur, a good founder?
That's a tough one. I think we're still trying to figure it out. But I would say like the trend that I've seen from people I look up to, they have like a relentless sense of focus. They don't get distracted by, like they don't have shiny object syndrome. You know, they don't get distracted by every little potential opportunity out there, but they stay focused on the bigger picture and they say no a lot. So that's really important. You could build a million different things. You could go a million different directions, but it's important to focus, like keep the main thing, the main thing. So I have focus, I would say, and then incredible sense of urgency as well.
Yeah, and I would say, I strongly believe that people make or break your business. That's why, like, I think it's one of the main jobs of founders is that you need to keep the spirits high and keep the team motivated. Of course, there is always going to be challenges. Sometimes challenges that, like, you maybe you cannot even see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you just have to be perseverant and resilient.
So who do you guys look up to now? Who is your role model?
It's hard to say role model. I think it's, we like to do things our own way, obviously. So I would say, but more people that I'm definitely very inspired by, I would say Jeppe Rindam from Plio, super, super strong entrepreneur. And he's also, we'd like to have him as an angel investor in Fullview. Gokul Rajaram, he's also a great investor that we have. He's a board member at Coinbase and was, you know, he basically built Google's AdSense business back in the day and Facebook ads business as well. And he's just an amazing operator and he can do things, you know, at a scale that most people can't. But people like that, I definitely am quite inspired by.
And for founders listening, in closing, what would you tell them? Founders listening now, maybe raising their pre-seed seed.
Maybe what I would mention is that don't overthink it. Just if you found a problem there in the market, you found something that you're super passionate about, don't overthink it. Just go out there, give it a shot. There is nothing you're going to lose. Like the worst case scenario, you're going to learn a lot of good things along the way. Like I've done it myself in the past. I bootstrapped to other companies. It was fucking hard. It took a real mental toll on me. But yeah, eventually I just kept pushing. And I also believe in life that sometimes it's not me who said it. I don't remember exactly who it was. But like sometimes things happen to you in life kind of as like individual points and you don't see the thread. But over the years, if you look back, you can definitely see a thread and a correlation between all those.
I know that. You can never connect the dots looking forward, only looking backwards. That's Steve Jobs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just to add to that as well, specifically, I would also say like to most founders, they wait too long. I think now that you asked specifically about people who are closing their pre-seed and seed stage funding rounds, like, you know, what you have today, like if you don't focus so much on your KPIs and your numbers right now, like at the end of the day, if you want to work with smart investors, they know that what you have today is not actually what you're going to be. Like they won't judge you by what you have today. They'll judge you by your potential and your vision you have for the next, you know, 10 plus years. So focus on that at the pre-seed stage. Craft a beautiful narrative. If you can, show a great product, early MVP product, and then don't think that, okay, I need to, you know, hit these numbers first and then we go out and fundraise. I need to like do this thing first and then go out and fundraise. Like smart investors don't care about that anyways. If you have at a pre-seed stage, if you have X MRR or XX MRR, it doesn't really matter at that stage.
Yeah, and if you, it doesn't matter how many no's you get, it's only about getting one yes. So if you got 99 no's, but you got that one yes, you're good to go.
I got 99 problems, but fundraising is not one. Amazing,
that
guys.
That could be the title of this.
Exactly. Thank you very much for taking the time, guys. I know that, Doran, you have to jump into a customer meeting. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot, Colin. Really enjoyed it.